Thank you very much for attending this portfolio committee on human settlement. We have two delegations today, the city of Cape Town and the province of Limpopo. We will start with the city of Cape Town because their presentation is not going to be in depth as the Limpopo one, because they have been here last week and therefore they are just finishing off where they left off. I know that we've got apologies from the member. Member Stole is attending the Public Works Portfolio Committee. Member Volmaran missed his flight last night from Joburg, so he's only flying in this morning. He's going to join us. But the rest will come in as we start. But I thought we shouldn't wait, as this is going to delay our time. I just want to welcome the delegation from the city of Cape Town. What we will do is to allow the mayoral committee member first to open up, and then once that has happened, we then allow the officials to do the presentation, and then after that we the HOD from the province, if there's anything that he wants to comment on or add, he will do that, and then we will discuss. That's going to be the order. So I thought let's start, and then so that we, I'm hoping that today you are okay. I can see you are fine, and you are welcome. Thank you so much for coming. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to come back a week later to finish, or to give you the detail that we didn't give you last week. Chairperson, I mean, we were asked to come back to address challenges that we have or have experienced over the last while, to address what is seen as an underspend in the USDG allocation. We were assessed as currently being underspent or underspending, even though our presentation last week showed that our current spend is completely in line with our planned spend, and that we plan to spend 100% of our USDG allocation. I must make the point that we try and we plan every year to make to spend 100% of our funding in our allocation. But of course there are unforeseeable events that take place in every year, and those give rise to the challenges that our presentation will demonstrate today. But just by way of example, contractors underperform or contractors go into liquidation, and then we have to make a plan to readjust our project so that we can try and spend 100% of the allocation. So the presentation we've brought this morning will show you the challenges that we've picked up over the last few months, how we're addressing them, and how we plan to spend 100% of our USDG allocation. Madam Chair, I understood from our engagement last week and then also our private greeting thereafter that the committee was looking to assist us to retain our full allocation, and that we needed to convince you that we were able to spend our allocation, and you asked us to come back with a shorter, sharper presentation focused on challenges and how we plan to address them. But yesterday I received some concerning information from our CFO that the decision to cut the $175 million has already been made, and that decision was based, according to the CFO, based on conversations he had with National Treasury, on an assessment by this portfolio committee and based on a recommendation by this committee. So I understood that we were invited back today to conclude our presentation in order for you to make that assessment, and I'm concerned that yesterday we received correspondence that said the $175 million is already going to be withheld. Now, Madam Chair, I'm sure you will understand better than many that there are serious implications for thousands of people if this cut is in fact made. We will obviously have to stop projects that are underway or start to slow them down or cancel or stop projects that have not yet started. And given the massive housing deficit in our city, these are going to be very cruel cuts that we're going to have to make. And just by way of example, we are at the one-year anniversary of the fires in Imizamayetu in Half Bay that displaced over 2,000 families. Those families have been living in temporary shelters for the last year. We're busy constructing roads and services with the support of the vast majority of that community, and we are in court with a small group who are refusing to move in order for the main road to go in, but we are dealing with that. But this work relies very heavily on USDG, and USDG is exactly for this kind of informal settlement upgrade. And aligned to that Imizamayetu project is a formal housing project which is also currently in its first phase of construction. And so the question we have to ask is, do we slow this down and people continue to live in temporary structures because we face cuts? Another example, on Thursday we have a contractor about to start on site in Guguletu to build 1,000 houses. That contractor is meant to go on site on Thursday. Given this reallocation or cut, do we stop that contract? So cutting the allocation of 175 million rand, especially when we believe we're tracking, someone's going to lose their phone, we're tracking to spend 100%, and a cut of 175 million is clearly going to require us to make quick, rapid decisions about big, deep cuts. Also want to say that numbers don't tell a full story, and we're going to show you some numbers now. When you saw the presentation last week, and we'll show it to you again now, you'll see, for example, in the Housing Implementation Department, one of our departments that is responsible for formal housing, we're showing a very large underspend against the planned spend. But in that unspent portion of the planned spend, there is two large provincial housing projects taking place in the city, where the city is providing the funding through USDG for bulk services. And there we have allocated 57 million rand for Belha and 130 million rand for Forest Village. And we've been waiting for those invoices to come in. And they came in this week, or a portion of them came in this week. And I understand that we are scraping the bottom of the barrel to be able to settle those invoices. So, I mean, there are risks for those kinds of projects. There's a risk for the province if we're not able to fully fund what we've already promised that we would assist them with those projects that are based within our city. So I'm really, Madam Chair, hoping that the information yesterday that the cut has already been made despite what we're going to say here today is something that is a miscommunication, and that this committee is going to be able to assist us to retain our full allocation so that we don't have to go forward and make those unplanned cuts. Thank you very much for the opportunity to make some introductory remarks.
Thank you very much, let's then go straight to the presentation. We note the comments.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you again for allowing us to come back today. We appreciate the opportunity. As our MACA member said, we are currently matching our financial performance of cash flows against expenditure where we are supposed to be at expenditure and actual expenditure today, which is 100% alignment. I put in these few slides at the beginning just to show consistency from the full recording of the presentation that we had last week, to show that there is a continuity in our presentation. This is just, Chairperson, for your committee to see in a bar graph the a sort of more detail of USDG expenditure to date versus planned cash flow. And the blue graphs are expenditure to date, yellow graphs are the cash flow, which was planned for this point. These are all city departments that are forming the x-axis or the basis of this graph that receive USDG allocations. And you can see that there is an alignment and a consistency against expenditure and the cash flows of the projects. Similarly, taking a look at the capital and operating breakdown for USDG plan versus actual, these are just figures for your information. And emphasizing the slide which I showed last week about historically what is the trend for USDG in the city of Cape Town which since 2012, as you can see, is very much on the upward trajectory and upward spend. This is the geographical alignment of the projects for USDG so that we understand where do they take place in space in the city. Obviously, given that our socioeconomic and density provisions are to try and make sure that we are spending this money where it is needed given the grant conditions. More focused on what your committee asked for and what you asked for last week, Chair, was to go into where we are experiencing challenges in projects that are USDG allocated and the planned remedial action. Within social services, the challenges of poor contractor performance, the impacts of procurement in the water resilience program. We obviously have some capacity and staff leaving issues, which are turnover issues that all organizations face, and we have an estimated risk of these projects of 15.5 million. The planned remedial action is part of from what I was saying last week, where we are able to analyze and assess all of the portfolios of projects, including their funding sources, is to move the resources and the values of USDG to projects that can perform. This, in this instance, is Heidefeld, early childhood development, the new Pelican Park Clinic, new informal settlement hub project, movement of funds to other performing projects is a sort of smaller allocation, but we are able to do so in adjusting thanks to the alignment between cash flow, expenditure, project performance, and project planning that we discussed last week. In the human settlement space, this is in the provision of the different typologies of formal housing mechanisms. We have poor contractor performance in Delft, which has had contract implications for the city, which obviously we are regulated in what we can do in the procurement environment and the legal provisions for contract management, gang violence in Valhalla Park, relocation and negotiations with non-qualifiers at the Morkans Cottage site, and tender submissions on smaller projects exceeding the subsidy quantum. Our remedial actions here is to place the funds in projects that are performing and are able to take the capacity within MFMA requirements and grant conditionality requirements, including in the appointment of a panel of home building contractors for housing developments and a security plan for projects in gang violent areas. In safety and security, there are no major implementation challenges in this program where there are USDG allocations, and we have optimized USDG funds to co-fund the construction of two new fire stations in Masipumalele and Wande. Contractors for both fire stations were appointed at the end of the last calendar year. Informal settlements and backyarders challenges. We obviously have in the implementation of informal settlement upgradings and typologies across the range of informal settlement types, community resistance, not in my backyard phenomenon, which I think the committee is very aware of, and the threat of land invasions on construction sites, which affects most if not all of our projects, and gang and criminal related violence in the implementation of projects. Funds in underperforming projects are being transferred to performing projects where we are able to accelerate delivery, as I said in the previous slide, under, of course, FMMA and SEM regulations, and also bearing in mind the audit criteria for moving funds between projects, the deployment of law enforcement to protect contractors while they're working on site, and proactive measures linked back to the planning system that we discussed last week. In the built environment management space, The Heidefeld Area 5 project had to be terminated by the city due to inadequate contractor performance. Bishop Leavitt Concrete Road project was underperforming as the main contractor is experiencing liquidation, which obviously affects our ability to perform once those contracts are assigned, and we have a total risk allocation there of 31 million, which we are using to upgrade and remedial actions the Prince George project, the Guguletu concrete road project, and the acquisition of land parcels in support of our densification and spatial development goals. Urban integration, there are no major challenges in this program, and it is proceeding on track. And in water and sanitation, as this committee knows, the emergency water projects related to the drought in Cape Town have taken a priority. Obviously, water and access as a basic service is our constitutional mandate, which we have to focus on, and this has had an impact on the procurement processes within the city, especially because of the prioritization of contracts that were not originally envisioned in the demand management plan, given the severity of the drought, including in the Cape Flats Aquifer major project and in funds for stormwater rehabilitation. We are prioritizing within this portfolio, and Borchards Quarry and Athlone wastewater treatment works can be fast-tracked, again, back to grant conditionalities in our funding packages within the city. Electricity generation and distribution challenges. We had poor contractor performance in Delft, and this had an impact on streetlight installation, gang violence in the Valhalla Park project, which obviously has distributed itself across a range of services involved in that multidisciplinary project. We have had challenges in appointing contractors in places like Masipumalele, Forest Village contracted today. I think our Mako member touched on that earlier. We had savings within Morkel's Cottage, which then allows us to reconsider and redistribute funds within the portfolio. And in Imazama Yetu, I believe our Mako member has spoken about that. There is a constant engagement with different community stakeholders in Imazama Yetu, and we have some challenges with the contractor appointment in Edward Avenue. We are transferring funds to where projects are performing, again linking back to the project analysis that I showed you last week. We have detailed project data and project management information that allows us to understand and distribute risk within the portfolio, and we are moving funds to Peta Square and KTC4. And in terms of our overall challenges, Chair, just at the city level, more broadly speaking, we do have a challenge of the predictability and certain of Division of Revenue Act allocations and what we would receive and how in terms of tranches coming to the city. As you can see, the first letter that we received to withhold our first tranche actually was issued before the start of our financial year in June. We received the first payment in July. We received a letter to reduce the second tranche in November of last year, as well as a reduced payment schedule or revised payment schedule also in November of last year, and in January of this year, we received the remaining portion of Tranche 2, but this was after much correspondence between the different levels of officials and administration, and also after the city's adjustment budget period had been closed. As you know, in moving funds between votes and between projects, we have to be prescribed by what we can budget and when in the calendar, when we can do adjustment budgets in terms of the MFMA, and obviously there are provisions that we have to escalate to the Minister of Finance, which has provisions within the MFMA if you are working at variances in those cycles. and the reduced allocation letter received in February of this year of the 175 million, which is a matter of discussion here today. So we are trying to revise the certainty of which we, when we receive tranches, when we receive notifications. We also are, as you know, in a compliance-driven environment. We have to take accord of what is officially gazetted as it links back to DORA and how does that translate into practical payment schedules that we receive. This is in line with our municipal adjustments budget process, which I touched on a few minutes ago, which can only be adjusted in the January adjustments budget 7 months after our financial year, the changes in respect of USDG funding, that deals with approved rollovers as well as transfers from non-performing to performing projects, and fund transfers outside of the adjustment budget are limited to our virements policy, which obviously is dictated by MFMA legislation and regulations and policy directives, which only allows for transfers within directorates or budget votes, which means that we can only transfer USDG funds in year between directorates once a year because of that adjustment budget process. Chair, that is the information that I think that you asked for at our last session.
Thank you very much to the City of Cape Town for the presentation. Honorable members, let me hear comments and questions. Maybe before that, the HOD from the province of Western Cape. Any comments?
I just want to say that this seems to be one of the best presentations that we have seen in a while, and I hope that you will actually receive it exactly as we have seen it. It is very impressive, to the point, to the detail, and what we have noticed from the presentation done by the city today is that they highlighted all the critical projects and the projects that are actually going to be implemented in areas that genuinely matters where the poor are, and I strongly feel that you need to support the city in actually appealing to Treasury not to take that portion away, because it actually demonstrates that it will have the absorptive capacity for the entire USDG grant. We know that they were slow starters, but we want you to have mercy so that the money is not lost to the province. I just also want to comment to the comments that you have made into your report that was distributed. We want that the corrections that we forwarded by our minister to actually be looked into, because it actually portrayed the provincial department of human settlements in slightly a light that was not actually very appealing. So we'd appeal to you to look into that report as well. And that's it. We support this presentation.
Have you seen the presentation before today?
Yes, ma'am. I did.
Thank you very much. Let me then hear for questions of clarity, comments from the honorable member. Honorable Baha, I see your hand was up, followed by Honorable Horai, followed by Honorable Soli, and Honorable Gadur. Thank you so much.
Firstly, I must commend the City of Cape Town that they were able to go back and rectify some of the mishaps that we saw in the last presentation. I guess I was the first person to shoot down the presentation last time, and I'm happy that I'm the first one today to commend the city in terms of what they have just presented. And I think that it really addresses key issues that we really wanted to get information on. But there's only two or three questions that I have, Jefferson. I understand fully what is covered on the presentation itself. But there's one common factor across projects, and that of poor performance by contractors. And I think it's something that is glaring throughout the presentation. What I would want to know is the city in control of this particular problem? And if so, what are the repercussions for contractors who are performing poorly? For an example, are these contractors awarded more work at a later stage, or are they blacklisted, or how are we handling the matter to avoid it? But two, again around contractors, in some projects there's an issue about, I think, late or delayed appointment of contractors. Does that talk to our procurement policies? Do we have challenges around that specifically? And if so, how are we addressing those? And the last one, Chairperson, is around, let me just get to the specific slide. Oh, yeah, is the movement of or transfer of funds from poor performing projects to those that are performing. How does that leave the recipients of the one project as funds are moved to the other? Which I think that probably might link to, I'm not sure how strong is our community engagement in terms of projects that are implemented. Because at times unrest in projects are due to communities or recipients being left behind in projects that are meant to improve their own lives. Because I think that once people feel that they are part of the project or initiative that is undertaken, then they take ownership, and that of ensuring that nothing goes wrong. So how is our facilitation processes happening within the city to try and avoid such from happening? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Baha. Honorable Farai?
Honorable Farai.
Thank you, Chair. So I was just asking my colleague that why he takes all my questions. Because I was exactly as going to ask those questions, but one chair that is left is the city has a strategy of dealing with these issues of the unrest. That project that had been stopped on the long run, people are stopping the project. And the last feature, what causes this slow starting or pace of the starting of the project? You seem to start your project at a slow pace. And now I see from this presentation you are now fast and you are now on top of the issues. What causes that? Can we have that what the strategy do you use, or why do you do that? Thank you, Chair. Other than me taken by my colleagues, but the presentation is very clear.
Thank you very much, Honorable Farai. Honorable Soli Malatsi.
Thanks, Chair. I just have three points. The one is, I'm just curious to check from the city, because I think two of the critical projects in there have been affected by gang violence, and that has obviously resulted in a spike on spending on security at those projects. And how much do you attribute, you know, the invasions, you know, or gang violence at specific projects to, you know, your increase in spending on safety on that? And, you know, how can you quantify that in terms of the impact that you would have had on the status of those projects? Because that also becomes, it's quite clear that it's becoming a major issue that affects your rollout of projects. And it's even evident into your spending on safety and security on there. And whether going forward with regards to all projects, you're now encapsulating a security plan, and that's budgeted within, so that it doesn't catch us by surprise going forward. And the second point, Chair, which for me is quite critical, is I think one of the key factors in here is the uncertainty regarding the time frames for allocation of tranches
to the city, and how then the city can then begin to spend in there. I mean, are we now moving towards the period where, following engagements with the department and treasury, there's sort of, you know, a compatible time frame that would do two things. One, ensure that, you know, the department or treasury does its allocation as is required to its time frame, but also so that your spending and your rollout of projects is not in a way hindered by that delay, if there is a delay in that. Because I think, again, it becomes one of the casual factors that affect the beginning of your rollover project. And perhaps, Chair, I mean, on this alluded fact of, you know, the 175 million, I think maybe it's a discussion that we as the committee need to have separately from this, because I think there's a lot in there, because, I mean, I don't remember us having engagement with Treasury per se, but I think maybe it's for a separate forum, just, yeah, for us.
Thank you very much, Honorable Malatsi. Honorable Pam.
Thank you, Chair. I think I should also fight with the Honorable Baha for taking one of my questions. What I'm going to be asking about is in relation to the slide on social services challenges and solutions. They say the planned remedial action on the budget for the Pelican Park Clinic. Pelican Park Clinic, I would like to know about it in particular. It is more of a health hazard related question than a human settlement question. The presentations that go into that clinic are mostly respiratory related. Is there anybody who has ever complained about that to this team? Because this is one of the prevalent problems that seem to occur in that area, especially from the area starting from Ottery Road through Zoekvlei and onwards. And there's a high incidence of respiratory problems, which are caused by the stench that comes from that area. And all the time, there is that kind of presentation from the community in that area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pham. Maybe explain the stench so that we understand.
This is the best that is floating around in that area.
Sorry. It stench meaning the bed. It is alleged that it is coming from the Zoekvlei dam area. I don't know whether there's a dam in that area, but there is that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pham. Honorable Nkadume.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues and commend the city on the presentation, because it shows us the challenges and also the remedial actions. And we are even happy to see that they are even thinking about places like Imizamuyetu, where people are sitting there in this informal settlement. My question will be on this issue of the gang violence on Vala Park project. I just wanted to be clarified, because we are used to this community protest and all this. This gang violence, how do they what are they doing, and how do they affect this project? If they can just clarify to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members, and thank you for commending the city of Cape Town for the improvement from last time to today. But unfortunately, I'm not going to commend them much, because you don't commend the fish for swimming. That's what they are supposed to be doing in the first place. Just a few clarities for myself. In the presentation, there's a mention of the issue of land invasion. And I'm asking the question so that it becomes a lesson even for us, for other areas. How do you deal with the issue of land invasion in the city of Cape Town? And whatever you are doing, is it yielding effect? I think for me, the other part that I wanted you to confirm is the issue of capacity, that you're quite comfortable with the capacity in the department, that you think you are okay, you've got all the skills that are needed to be able to do the work, if you can just confirm that. Maybe the department, the national department, must just come in and explain to us and just talk to the issue of the contentious element of concurrency between the province and the city of Cape Town in terms of the treasury issue. If you can just probably comment on that, and maybe comment on the internal monitoring capacity that the national department does to metros in terms of making sure that the USDG is being spent by the metros. There's a comment that says Trench 3 was supposed to have been received by the city of Cape Town by the 21st of February, and they are saying they still haven't received. I know that's a treasury issue, but I just probably want you to comment on that, if possible. And we then, for me, what the city of Cape Town has not been able to demonstrate. I know that the presentation is projecting 100% spending. And you know that for the past financial years, you've never spent 100%. And maybe it's important for me to demonstrate what is it that you think you're going to do differently to be able to spend this whole amount. Because ever since USDG was introduced in 2011, you've never spent 100%. So what is going to be the miracle now that is going to actually make you spend the entire 100% as you project? It's going to be very important for us to understand that, so that even us, when we talk on your behalf, we are able to say, no, this is what they have said, they have learned the best. You, year in and year out, money has always been taken from you for not spending all of it. So what is it that you think is going to be different? Thank you very much.
And Chair, may I make some comments at a higher level and then ask the team to respond in more detail? I'm going to start with Honourable Bacher's questions. With regard to poor performance by contractors, I think that the first point to make is that we try to work with poor performing contractors before we terminate the contract, because terminating the contract means we have to restart the procurement process all over again, and that substantially delays projects. So our first point is to try and work with poor performing contractors to try and get them to perform. Contractors that underperform and end up in termination, they are blacklisted in terms of our system, and the officials and the professionals can deal with that in more detail. The question around transfer from poor performing contract or projects to better performing contracts, I mean, the contract or the project from where we move the funding to is never cancelled. I mean, it may be one of those projects that roll over to a following financial year, but we don't leave projects cancelled because of poor performance. As I say, if we terminate a contract, we have to reappoint a new contractor, and that takes some time, and there's a gap sometimes in progress on site. But we don't abandon the project, and those communities do eventually get their project, but there is a delay. In terms of the question of facilitation, we have substantial engagement and facilitation, and a community will always tell you that there's never enough. We do what we can in engaging and facilitating and working with communities so they can understand what is going on with their project on the ground, and obviously every project has a project steering committee, and those are elected from the community, and their role is also to communicate with their community around delays and project problems. The Honourable Karai asked about unrest and how we plan to stop this in the long run. And I think we must we have to distinguish. It's also a similar question from Honourable Malatsi around gang violence and in land invasions. We must separate the issue of land invasions from gang violence. What we've experienced in some projects, and Balala Park is a good one, a good example to use. The gang intimidation was not unrest or protest. It was gang bosses in the area intimidating the contractor to the point where the contractor said, I'm no longer safe and my family is no longer safe. I'm being intimidated at my house. So while we could put in place a security plan to protect the site, we obviously couldn't guard the contractor and his family and his children as they went to school and his wife went to work. So it was a direct threat by gang bosses seeking payment, backhand payment, from a contractor, and the contractor withdrew from that project. So we are developing safety and crime plans around projects, but whether we will be able to protect a contractor at their home is obviously not something we can guarantee. So we're going to go back to Balala Park to use it as an example with a security plan. That security plan, the one that we worked out with our Metro Police and law enforcement, was going to cost 20 million rand to implement, which adds about 30 to 50,000 rand per unit of house that we're going to build. So that's a big challenge for us. The other question that Honourable Malatsi had was around, I think the department needs to answer that, around the allocation and the tranches. Chairperson, your question around how we deal with land invasions, I think Rihanna Pretorius is here, can deal with that more adequately than I can. And the question on capacity is a good question, because we did restructure our city at the beginning of from 2017, and in that process we did identify in the human settlement space capacity, lack of capacity. One of the things we identified was that project managers were appointed, many of them were appointed on an annual contract, so their contract had to be renewed annually. What we did within the first few months of restructuring is that we converted those employees to permanent employees so that you can have continuity in our space. But there is still lack of capacity, and we are filling that lack of capacity with construction managers who are on site who can make projects happen on time. So your final question around how we are planning to turn things around. Last week, Mr. Kesson presented quite substantially on the project program performance management system that is being implemented, which is meant to assist us to identify where projects are falling behind and how we can address them. But that is a new program that is still currently being unpacked, and there's still more work to be done. In my comments last week, I said that I've been in this role for a year and a bit now, so I'm still new to it. But I've been listening to the previous minister at MINMEC complain about underspend, underperformance, and I've been engaging with both the housing teams and the finance department around how we change the planning around USDG spend so that we can better perform. And 2017, 2018, you're seeing some of those results, but I think 2018, 19, you'll see it more fully. So I think next year is the year to be reckoned with. Thank you.
Very much. Can we then get a response from the official?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, through you, Chair, for Councillor Heron's remarks. I think he's dealt very substantively with most of the issues. I'll start with your comments, Chairperson. This was also part of the reason why we wanted it on record last week, and we submitted it to you to show that it's not about miracles. It's about better planning linked to better project management, linked to better procurement, linked to better contractor management. That's ultimately what shifts expenditure, and it's ultimately what shifts outcomes and benefits for the community. We are seeing the upward trend of those investments. What are we still doing to better capacitate ourselves? And I'll deal, because Councillor Heron has dealt with the specific members' questions, I'll deal with the thematic issues. Contractor management, we have already put in place, or contract management, a new system in the city that helps us better understand the legal content of contracts and the penalty clauses within them, and how exactly line departments can better manage as contract owners ultimately contracts. We have standardized a methodological approach for project management in the city, and we have identified those skills that we need to attract within the city, and have implemented the mechanisms at a human resource level to try and attract them. We essentially deal with the uncertainty of tranches. Not everything is within our space to deal with. As you know, we are reliant on the good offices of this committee. We are reliant on different national departments. We have reached out formally, our acting city manager, to engage at that administrative level to see if we can just fix when exactly the tranches come in and how, flag that with your committee. In terms of respiratory disease, we have an excellent analysis in each area of what is the burden of disease and what are the requirements for handling and analyzing the burden of disease. Those are respiratory ailments, they are lifestyle diseases, there are diseases of people living together, just in the ordinary day-to-day living of living in a city and living in communities. That information goes to our clinics. We are a primary health service provider by agreement with the national government in terms of the National Health Act, and perform mandate for clinics on their behalf. We try and integrate our information between their primary health mechanisms and ours, and we have a very good idea of the distribution of and burden of disease throughout the city and what is required in order to address it. Indeed, part of what is required is better sanitation, ultimately, better services, better basic services, and the flow of water, which is ultimately what has an impact or a compound impact on the burden of disease. In terms of which is part of what USDG tries to deal with and its essential logic. In terms of land invasions, and Rihanna can come in here for greater detail, I think that we face land invasions almost on a daily basis. There is a response unit that responds to land invasions. Part of the reason why we have to respond is obviously the provisions of the law in terms of if you set up structures within a certain time period, then it triggers a whole range of other legal steps. But there is great coordination between the informal settlements department, law enforcement, and a range of other departments in the city to respond on a daily basis, and also to get information from communities who are ultimately our partners to understand where are these movements happening and how can we respond to them. If I can just ask my colleague, Chair, to elaborate.
Yes, my colleague has set the scene. We work very closely with public order policing, our city law enforcement, the Metro Police, and the Anti-Land Invasion Unit. We are protecting city-owned land, and we've got an agreement to protect all provincial land. We face challenges with private land invasions where the owner needs to take the first responsibility, and it's not always possible for the owner to get the interdict on the land, but we try to cooperate and notify private owners as far as possible. We've been keeping statistics on all the demolitions or the invasions that we are facing, and we are averaging about 15,000 per annum of invasion attempts that we have to deal with. We've also seen that recently the land invasions is not more
the ones and twos, individual families occupying land, is much more organized. They're coming with truckfuls of materials to these sites, and it's turning more violent lately. So it is something that is that's keeping us very busy, especially over weekends. And then I think maybe if I can maybe take the opportunity, we are facing challenges with state-owned land and protection of state-owned land, and how we need better cooperation with our state-owned industries, public works nationally, in terms of protecting their land from land invasions. They are also under constant threat. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fisher. Mr. Kaplan, maybe you seem to be having a grasp of what needs to be done around the USDG. Just for my own comfort, how long have you been dealing with this work of managing the USDG?
Well, I don't manage the direct spending. My department analyzes that these trends that you see from the analysis is about 4 or 5 years in the making, which has been also my direct involvement.
So it's been about 4 or 5 years. So the underspending in the previous years you've been there, when you have not been able to spend the full amount of the USDG?
Well, I've certainly been present in the city, and when we identified the expenditure problems, Chairperson, which is about 5 or 6 years ago, it was not just USDG, it was actually in a number of grants and also our own internal city funding, we embarked on this change process to improve project planning and project performance. And our theory of change, which was a sort of when would we see the results, we knew that it would come incrementally year on year, but after about 5 or 6 years, you would start to see the big takeoff in terms of entrenching those systems, which I think is reflected in the data.
Much. So in your own understanding, the project planning has been bad previously. That's why you have to implement the new system now. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. National Department, you can come in now. How you come in, I don't know whether the DG will come in or the OSH. That's fine. Come in.
Thank you, Chair. There are three questions that we need to respond to. The first one is about the monitoring capacity of the department. And my colleague, Joseph Lishabadu, will respond to that question. And the second question is about the DORA processes, the withholding and the stopping of the grant. The CFO sitting right behind me is going to answer that question. And Chair, before we do that, I want to stress the point that first, we don't derive pleasure in shifting funds from any metro to another metro. We have an obligation to mitigate the risk of losing the grant. Last year, we lost more than 280 million rand back into the fiscus from the two metros, from Cape Town and the city of Johannesburg. And these are the two metros that have been giving us a lot of headache for the last between 3 years. It was Joburg. There were times when they were doing well and the graph had gone down. Last year, the city of Cape Town applied for a rollover of about 50 million rands, and that rollover was granted. Now, in this current climate of fiscal constraints and fiscal consolidation, Chair, it's important that we do our job. I do my job as a transferring accounting officer, which is to hold the metros accountable when metros are not spending the money. We shifted the funds as a last resort. We don't start there. We have been very lenient, as you can see. It's for the first time this year that we have made a proposal to shift the funds. We never shifted the funds, despite the fact that the quality of spending in the metro, especially in Cape Town, has not been a good one. For the last 4 years, I think the figures, these are audited figures, which speak for themselves. And what we also want to avoid is opportunistic spending as well, where we end up spending for the sake of spending. Like in previous years, we saw the acquisition of land parcels that were not necessarily in the plans to be acquired. And when we do our homework, we do project level verification, you realize that this particular piece of land is not a piece of land that was ready for acquisition. You still have to do a lot of planning. And in fact, in some instances, you realize that only 50 or 60% of that piece of land is developable. We've raised these issues, and I'm sure my colleague is going to talk to it, because we do have project level verification. We do have quarterly performance reviews. We have performance reviews. The figures that we present here are not figures that are coming from us, are figures that are coming from the cities themselves. You've seen the January figure is 25.4%. That's the end of January, and that's the figure that the city has presented here. So we have to manage the risk of losing the money back to the fiscal. We're not doing this to punish anybody. We're not in the business of punishing this. The withholding, before we get to that point, Chair, last week there's a slide, and I think the minister raised a question with regard to the slide on the top 25 non-performing projects by value. This is a slide that was presented by the city. And in that top 25 non-performing projects by value presented by the city, you would have noticed that most of them are projects that you have not disbursed. And you're talking about January, disbursement at 100%. I think one of them, the biggest of all of those projects, is the water desalination plant, which has an allocation of about 500 million. One project, 500 million, hasn't disbursed, means there's no expenditure. I've got those figures in front of me on the slide, and I can share it. It hasn't disbursed as of January. There were others as well. Now, perhaps when you do what we call risk mitigation at a project level, you replace non-performing projects with performing projects. That's allowed. It's a standard procedure that we do in the industry. And when you make that decision and you are left with 4 months before the end of the financial year, you are at risk of not spending your allocation. Remember, at the end of December, you are halfway towards your financial year. So if you're sitting at 25% of your expenditure, it was 24%, halfway, which is end of December, then all what you are telling us is that you are at risk of not performing or spending the amount. We monitor all the 8 metros, and we've picked up the trends over the years. Unfortunately, Chair, this is the year where we have to make a decision because the fiscal is not performing very well. We've done it at the provincial level. We've moved funds from poor-performing provinces to high-performing provinces. We know that it's not nice to move funds, but we have to protect the funds. Instead of losing the money back into the fiscal, I would rather make it a point that at least it stays within the system, it stays within the sector. We don't lose it because there are other competing demands, NHI, and many other competing demands that the fiscal has to fund. I'll ask my colleague Nshabane to respond to the performance part of it, and then the CFO will respond to the stopping and the withholding DORA processes.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning to the members. Mine will be a brief input, Madam Chair. In terms of the grant framework for the USDG. The cities submit their plans. In particular, what we are interested in is the performance matrix that sets out what projects are going to be implemented and so forth, and at what point what resources are attached to them. That's one part. The department has a fairly elaborate monitoring and evaluation capability. Not only do we do assessment of reports that are submitted, compliance reports, Madam Chair, we undertake project level monitoring from both the grants management point of view, but also the MNE point of view. But we also do ad hoc and in between projects level monitoring. Madam Chair, the quarterly reviews are undertaken with all the metros. At that point, we look at the performance of each city, and the trends are noted, the trends are discussed with the cities, discrepancies are clarified. I must admit, Madam Chair, that the performance matrices that are submitted by the cities, more than is required, must align with the MTSF priorities. The committee would be aware that among the government priorities in the MTSF, outcome 8, the biggest performance area there is the upgrading of informal settlements. And therefore, over time, we want to see to what extent are we moving in upgrading of informal settlements per city, over and above everything else, but because this grant is meant to address that challenge specifically. So, Madam Chair, I must admit that that is how we monitor performance. But it's not so much just sitting back and just watching what goes on. We do from time to time engage with cities to help overcome the problems that they may encounter. Now, the framework allows the cities on a quarterly basis to shift funds from underperforming projects to those that are performing. Now, how the cities do it, it's up to them. Now, but also because of this quarterly forum, we allow the cities to peer learn, to learn from each other how this management of the implementation can be done and improvements and so forth. Now, we would expect that every city, no exception, City of Cape Town, on a quarterly basis, you would use that window available to shift funding between projects depending on performance, so that you don't wait to the end or much later to want to then make these adjustments. But the framework allows for that. Secondly, Madam Chair, and it may well be that it is a matter that I thought the city would be able to then say, given the challenges we've been encountering on delivering projects, these are the measures that we are instituting to improve performance. And I think we've crossed a bridge there to a point where we are all in agreement that the underperformance is an issue that we must resolve. And therefore, the main question should then be what is being done differently going forward to avoid, one, projects not being implemented, secondly, the underspending that results from that. The starting point shouldn't be the budget, save the budget. It should be about improving project performance, because when projects are performing, you don't worry about expenditure. That follows naturally. Madam Chair, I thought I should highlight those areas. And lastly, Madam Chair, the painful part is that from a point of view of the National Department, we would want to see performance on informal settlements upgrading. And I must say, and I must put it on record here, that it has been rather a slippery engagement with the city. in terms of which informal settlement are you upgrading at what point in time using what resources. We are in conversation with the city, but we are not where we are with the other cities where we can openly know so many informal settlements. This year one, this is the intervention we are making. Year two, that's the intervention we are making. Year four, five, up to a point where settlement or informal settlement is fully upgraded. But I'll leave it at that, Madam Chair. Safe to say that's a matter that we'll continue to engage and monitor with the city.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, colleagues. Good morning, Chair. I think following what the DG and DDG Lushabane has just indicated now, it's important to indicate that the conditions that are in the DORA, or rather the framework itself that Mr. Lushabane is talking about, are informed by the Division of Revenue Act. That at the time of its inception, be it at a bill, we communicate with Metro and they input into the bill itself before it becomes enacted as an act. In that, we agree on those conditions that are governing in the administration of the conditional grants. Among them is the urban settlement development grant. But Chair, as we move along, and I think the monitoring part is alluded, whereby we indicate to say better to monitor and assist metros before we could even take money, it being the last resort. We indicated during the min-mec of August 2017, when it was the first min-mec, where we indicated and warned metros, including the provinces, to say, given the status of the performance of the USG as well as the HSDG in the previous year, we are binded by the Division of Revenue Act to monitor from the beginning of the year, which is the first quarter. And we indicated that in that period, we are intending to apply the provisions of Division Act early in the year, just so that by the time the year ends, we are in a better position to can know exactly where to allocate the funds, in which projects the funds will be allocated, having engaged all the cities as well as the National Treasury. And in that process, we engaged the city of Johannesburg as well as the city of Cape Town after the monitoring of the first quarter, as agreed upon at the first win-back. And those engagements have been towing and turning between us and the Cape Town, and whereby the provisions, as alluded to in the Division of Revenue Act, were followed by the National Department. And notwithstanding the fact that we had correspondence from the Cape Town, we also communicated with the National Treasury. And Chair, just to cut the whole matter short, is the issue that the Metro is indicating to say we had indicated we shall be taking away 175. That is very true. However, the processes as followed were given to the Metro as well as National Treasury. But I must indicate that while we were at the stage of having withheld the funds, which is the second tranche, in January this year we had to refund the funds to the province. Be that as it may, the issue of the stopping came into the effect of the 175. The point that we need to emphasize here is that in the event that the National Treasurer also picks up that there is no performance, Treasury has a prerogative to apply the Section 20 of the Division of Revenue Act, which is the last stage that the 125 is at as we speak. And Treasury would come at the later stage, which is the final stage, just before the amendment or the adjustment budget of the Metro, which is between January and as we speak, the process is unfolding. And that engagement has been done in concurrence with the National Treasury. As we speak, Chair, the engagements that we are having, the engagements that we've been having, have been communicated with National Treasury. And it being an action between ourselves and National Treasury, we would not be in a position at this stage, Chair, to can say, while the process is advanced, that we do not stop the 175 because the Section 20 indicates to say, notwithstanding all the engagements of the processes, Treasury has the right to apply the Section 20, which concurrently it has been done. However, as we move, we would not have transferred the third tranche to the Metro, given the process that is unfolding. Yes, they are very true to say they have not received until the Gazette is finalized, until we had concluded on the 175, then the remaining amount would be transferred to the Metro as such. That's correctly so, Chair, in terms of the responsibility of the accounting officer in terms of the Division of the Act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CFO. Now, I just want probably to, I know the councillor doesn't need to come in here. I just wanted to have a sense from the officials of the City of Cape Town to sort of kind of confirm to me that indeed the min-mac of August 2017 did take place and there was a discussion between yourselves and the National Department. You can just confirm.
Yeah, Chairperson, we do have engagements in terms of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, including MINMEX. I was not present at that MINMEX meeting myself. Wayne, were you in attendance there? All right. So, Chair, we will have to just consult our records. I will just say, if I may, with your permission, this is, if you look at the two presentations together last week and this week, it is because we're trying to deal with delivering value, not just expenditure, what actually is delivered on the ground. And just by way of clarification, this system that I'm describing measures the entire capital budget over the whole MTREP cycle, not just USDG.
Mr. Kesson, I think my question is based on we as the portfolio committee, we are trying to assess the intergovernmental relationships between the Department of Human Settlement and the City of Cape Town in relation to human settlement. That's what we are trying to, so that we can have the comfort. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah.
If I can just maybe ask that at that level, our city manager has reached out formally to the national department, Mr. Mbandazaya. If we can just ask the committee and also our colleagues in the national department, can we embrace those engagements at the official level so that we can have this interaction? We agree it must take place between the department, national treasury, and also city officials.
Confirm to us as the committee, how is the relationship between yourselves and the department?
I see. Well, the relationship is that we engage with the department proactively on a very regular basis and very frequent basis. Where we have issues of clarification that we require, that is then when we formally reach out to say, can we trigger it to DDG or DG level? So that is what I can submit to the committee at this time.
And the City of Cape Town is comfortable with the fact that when it comes to USDG, there is guidelines that say 50% of that fund must be used for informal settlement upgrading, and we're comfortable with that. And lately, it has put 3% to say you can use 3% of that fund for capacity of the city. You are comfortable with that. So all those things you know, and you are following them. Okay. Can I probably, from the DG, get a sense of the intergovernmental relations between the Metro and the department? Probably before you come in, let me hear the HOD from the province.
Madam Chair, I just can say that when it comes to intergovernmental relations between province and city, it is actually functional. We are meeting the city on a bi-monthly basis to discuss issues of concern. We have a forum where we meet the EDs, the ED for informal settlements, the ED for TDA, or maybe they are and their representatives to discuss any issues affecting the human settlements, family, including our catalytic projects, HSDG, and USDG issues affected. We are to the extent that we as the province, there are certain projects that we are where we are implementing directly within the city itself, and some of those attract the USDG resources, of which we are in engagement with the city, where the city actually part fund those. And where they are actually having a problem, we actually raise the hand to say this is where we can assist, as we have done for all these years. And because the USDG, which is slightly different from the HSDG, the USDG, the City of Cape Town municipal manager is the receiving officer. The province is not the receiving officer of the USDG. The province is the receiving officer of the HSDG. That's where we have authority. But when it comes to the USDG, the city have authority, and we are applicants for funding there, and we can provide the assistance as required. And we certainly do, as they have demonstrated in the presentation on the various areas where the province have actually.
And you don't have issues with the fact that the municipal manager is the receiving recipient of the USDG. I just want you to comment on that.
On the
because
USDG.
We are trying to build an understanding of what is happening in the metros and the provinces.
Okay.
So if you are not being honest with us, you're not helping us.
No, I will be very bluntly honest with you. You must understand, it's the category of the grant, which makes it not for the province to be the receiving officer. However, ideally, we would have loved it to be like that. We would have loved it to be just like the HSD. That is the honest, I'm giving you the honest opinion, I'm trying to be irrelevant. Now, if it was the HSDG, then we would have actually made sure that it is properly, the funds are actually not lost to the province, as is the case. This province have never lost a half a cent to national in the past 5 years, not a half a cent. We would have made sure that the very same happened on the USDG if we had control. But it's the type of the grant that actually made it a direct grant between national and the city, of which we are applicant, we assist where we can, but we don't have absolute authority.
No, thank you very much, HOD. Didri, in your own, where you are sitting, the IGR between the departments nationally and the city of Cape Town, how would you characterize it?
Chair, we have technical MINMEC, which I chair, and the city of Cape Town has been represented very well by Mr. Rugaba. I think there are only few meetings that Mr. Rugaba didn't attend. The last one in was it in February last month. That's the only meeting. I think the majority of meetings Mr. Rugaba has attended and participated in those meetings because of experience. He's been in the industry for some time. So we become richer when he is in technical MINMEC. Chair, last year we've been monitoring the city of Cape Town very closely. Okay, we have to be honest with each other. In the last year, I called a meeting with the former city manager. We sat, we discussed, we wanted to take funds from the city of Cape Town last year, 150 million rand, because we were worried about the performance. And we made a practical recommendation that we still want to keep those funds within the city. So we recommended that they must be moved to projects that the province is managing within the city, because the city will benefit out of that. But unfortunately, it was too late, and Treasury said, look, let's leave it for this year. Let's see how we can manage things in the next financial year. We've been doing this consistently since 2012. The former head of human settlements, Dr. Bloomfield, can attest to this. I don't know if he's still there. We had a series of meetings with them, and we said we worried about your expenditure patterns. There's a question that was asked earlier, Chair, which is a very valid question by Honorable Kurai, that why do we leave things until it's too late, and why do we start slow in the beginning of the year? In the built environment, most built environment projects, Chair, are multi-year projects, not one-year projects. So this starting slow thing, I don't know where it comes from, because you plan for 3 years or more, and you should be able to look at your pipeline of projects. I think, to be honest with you, the presentation that was made last week is a presentation, is a very useful presentation, but only for planning purposes, because it talks to pipeline planning. What we worried about now is in-year performance, the in-year performance. The plans are not going to help you to disperse that much, but projects that are under construction are the ones that are going to help you to disperse the money. So we hold each other accountable, Chair. I guess there has to be consequence management when we are losing funds back to the fiscals. We have to hold each other accountable. It's a technical limit where we hold each other accountable. We're very frank with each other. I will advise my colleague from the city of Cape Town to come to those technical meetings, because we are very brutal with each other. Why? Because we have to make sure that we spend the funds. We don't talk nice to each other there, Chair. But there is a strong relationship amongst all the three spheres of government. We discuss things openly, and obviously it's not nice to lose funds. You can ask some of the colleagues from the province. They were not happy that we have moved almost 600 million rands from poor performing provinces to performing provinces. By the way, the AGOD of the Western Cape is a beneficiary, because it's doing very well. So you received the extra allocation from those provinces that are not performing. So it's not a punitive measure. It's intended to make sure that we safeguard the funds. I guess the revenue services, they work hard to collect this money. And we also have to make sure that we spend widely and we plan widely. So there's nothing personal between us and the metric.
No, I've been interrogating this question because remember, the technical min-mec, the politicians are not there. So my colleague here, the making member, is not there. And it was important for me to actually look at this so that everybody can understand and have an appreciation that in the technical meeting, this discussion started early. What happens on those discussions and how they go back to the seat and how then they are discussed is the area that I wanted to demonstrate, so that we can have a sense. But I think we and as well have a sense that by the time it comes to us as the portfolio committee, remember those processes have been running for a long time at the MINMEC level. But your last question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First I want to confirm that from our own feedback from officials, I'm aware of the engagements between the officials and human settlements on all three spheres of government. I know those discussions are robust. I get the feedback, understand that what is being said there. So nothing that has been said here is a surprise to me. I'm fully aware of that. The DG raised a question, the question that Honorable Karai asked, and I didn't respond to it, and I wanted, and it leads into my next point. The question around slow start. So a slow start may be in a year where you have lots of new projects starting. And as the DG rightly says, those projects will span over multiple financial years. We can only issue a tender once the budget is approved for a project. That means that the earliest that we can issue a tender is end of May. That's usually when we approve the financial year, the head spud or the interest. And a tender can take 6 to 9 months to be awarded. So if there's a slow start in spending, it will be in a year where there's lots of new projects. But that shouldn't be the pattern in the following years, because those projects should continue over multiple years, and so the spending should be up and running. So in a year where you have lots of new projects starting, there will be a slow start, because you can only start your tender process right before the budget kicks in once it's been approved by council. which comes to my concern around how we're being evaluated on performance. Because I heard from both the DG and the CFO that our performance is poor. But if our performance, if we manage being measured on what our planned performance was and our spend is in line with what we planned to spend at that time, then what measurement is being used to say that we are performing poorly? Because I think that is the discussion that must happen amongst the officials. What measurement is national human settlements using to determine that we're performing poorly when we're saying we plan to spend 100 million by the end of May and we spent 100 million by the end of May, therefore we are 100% on track? But it seems that there's a difference between how we're managing our performance and how the National Department of Human Settlements is. And that would be a discussion I'd really like us, our officials, to get involved in.
Thank you very much. I think for me as well, Mr. Captain, I think the next technical meeting, I think it's going to be very critical for you to attend. But I think you sitting with a lot of information that probably would assist the department, and you can argue the case of the city of Cape Town better. So help Mr. Rakaba to go to the meeting as well. Technical meeting, you don't have to sit for the next one. That's that technical one. So that there's that kind of recuperative information in between. And the last part for us, I think it's going to be very important. You don't have to come. You can just send it to us. We would like to have a list of the informal settlements that you are upgrading, because then that would also help us to have a sense of how then we can mitigate in terms of whatever that is being happening. Send us that list of the informal settlements that you are busy dealing with in this, so that we can just email them to the secretary, and then we can help. Thank you very, very much. And I hope that you that man there, that's the DJ, that lady there is the CFO. I think come closer to them. And actually argue your case very strong. Yeah, thank you so much. All right.
Thank you. Who's the third one? I only know of two.
I hope you replace him with another female. Anyway, so can I hand over to the SOC?
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues, good morning. At Chairperson, I'm accompanied by my colleagues. Next to me, I have Mr. Philip Chauke, who is our DDG for Human Settlement. He's back in the department permanently now. And we also, on my right-hand side, I have Mr. Patrick Kuno, who is our CFO, who has not been with us for some time, but he's back in the department now. And next to him, we have Dr. Nyamazana, who is the support to the department through the National Department. There is an apology that was sent through Chairperson for the Honorable MC who could not make it today. These are the colleagues that are accompanying me today. Thank you. And I'm Naga Dumayisile. And thank you.
Thank you very much. I just want to confirm that apology from the MEC. He did indicate that he is not going to be able to join the committee this time around because of other commitments. But we do remember that he was here in November, even a few days when he was appointed. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, once more. Chair, we're presenting a third quarter report, but I think the approach is basically to reflect on where we were at the time, the last time we met or presented to the portfolio committee. It gives a progress report in terms of a third quarter report, but we're also accounting for the intervention plan that we presented the last time and its impact, so that then we're able to show the status currently in terms of the performance of the department. On the background slide, Chair, we basically are giving an indication of what we had, a combination of the grant and the rollover, and the initial targets. Now, since the withdrawal of the 150 million, we are now at 1.2. The target still remains the same, including the rollover target. We didn't have the rollover target for services, we only had rollover targets for the units. Now, the last time we met, which was in November and not necessarily September, in terms of the expenditure, we're sitting at 39%, with just a little progress in terms of the units and the services. Now, as at end of the third quarter, which was the 31st of December, we were sitting at 59%, which was not much of a progress that we made, basically. Yes, at this point in time, I think that probably the information that was presented by our national department, as at end of January, we were sitting at 67%, 80% of performance delivery. Currently, Chair, which is the last one, as at 8th of March, we were sitting at 86%, which then gets to show that though we're not at where we're supposed to be in terms of performance, but it does show that the interventions that we have since put in place are beginning to yield results. We have since appointed HDA as part of intervention to assist in appointing high-capacity contractors. It's five of them. They were allocated 5,000 units, and I think because of the performance or the at the pace they are moving, we have since transferred 150 million for them to be able to honour the commitments they've made with the contractors, and we'll be transferring the last tranche to them so that then at least they are able to make payments. Chair, the challenges that we were sitting with and which we also presented during the last session was they established that we're currently sitting with a database which was a bit flawed and it was only biased towards there are certain areas that it didn't actually cater for. Late appointment of service providers, late approval of developmental areas, contractor-to-contractor sessions, we did talk about this, where we found that once contractors are appointed, they quickly switch to other contractors. But what also got us into trouble, a big trouble, was the fact that quite a number of contractors that were appointed previously suited to one particular contractor, and unfortunately, when he went under, a lot of those contractors could not actually perform. One other area where we actually did not do well for a very long time, which we actually got us into a position where we were, was the issue of not applying consequence management, which is now a talk to contract management in particular. And that was our challenge in terms of the department. The other challenge that we actually had or experienced was the fact that most of the contractors would then cast a lot of foundations, and because there was a lot of money allocated at foundation level, and they would leave the foundations without completing the units, and we then have to battle to complete those units. The low staff morale, which was also a challenge, we had instability at executive level or leadership level. The NEC did allude to that the last time we were here. And I think because now there is a permanent HOD, the DDG for Human Settlement is back full-time, the CFO is back full-time, we are expecting stability at that level, which should actually assist, and that should take care of the last bullet point that talks to senior management operating in silos. So the presence of the leadership is actually assisting. Progress in as far as the recovery plan is concerned, I did actually talk to the HDA-related issues. We are having one-on-one meetings with contractors where we're actually dealing with issues of underperformance. It wasn't actually happening as frequently as it is happening currently, and this is what has assisted us to be able to terminate 14 contractors as we speak because of underperformance. So these sessions are actually able to assist us to pick up underperformance quickly, and where there are challenges that need intervention by the department, we are able to intervene. I've already spoken to the issues of contract management. There is a structure in place, a formalized governance structure, and it's meeting on a regular basis to assess all these issues and make the necessary recommendations. The HDA, I've alluded to this slide. I think I will then move straight to third quarter performance. My apologies, the slides are not numbered. The slide is written performance report for third quarter in the table. The planned target, that is a combination of the sites and units, this October, November, December, we had 3,720. And the actual delivery was 3,304, with a variance of 416. December, there was a bit of improvement where we had actually more than what we had planned for in terms of delivery. And that below is basically the expenditure that we are accounting for as at the end of December. The next slide is breaking it down properly, but it's basically what I was alluding to the previous slide. With regards to the sites, that's what we had. So the target was 1,165, and we delivered 770 as at end of December. That is the specific site, and the target for the units was 2,555, and we delivered 2,534. Work in progress, as at that time, we had foundations that were 893, and we had wall plates that were 1,013. And during that time, we further appointed contractors, 18 that were allocated 2,002 units, and 72 that were allocated 6,000 units, and they are still actually on the ground. Chair, I think the presentation is a combination of the targets that we have in the ATP as well as the approved business plan. I will just not bore the members with the probably the ATP one, but it still talks to human settlement related matters, and go straight to the slide that talks to interventions during the third quarter. The meetings were arranged with affected municipalities and follow-ups to get clearance certificates so that they are signed. This talks to some of the challenges within the ATP. and areas where we had challenges with ward councillors, committees were arranged to assist in as far as those issues are concerned. So the presence of the MEC is actually assisting in making sure that where there are bottlenecks within the municipalities, those bottlenecks are actually taken care of. The last time we were here, Chairperson, the province was not doing well with regards to the military vest program. And that was as a result of a decision that was taken at the provincial level that we had 75 square meters instead of 50 square meters. And that decision has since been rescinded. We have gone back to the normal size, which is 50 square meters. And that information has since been communicated with HDA because we are being, it's one of the programs that has been done through HDA. That we're raising a number of issues, challenges with regards to the mining towns programs in those municipalities and the interventions that we've put in place. Chairperson, we further, over and above the intervention plan, the interventions or the recovery plan that we presented the last time, we had a strategic session and we had further strategic interventions, which is what we what I'm presenting currently. And that came up with quite a number of issues, and one of the issues was that we should rather establish a multi-layered database of contractors that are properly graded. The previous ones were not properly graded. Now we're looking at making sure that they all have the CIDD grading as well as the NHBRC registration. And now the DAC is finalizing the terms of reference, and we're hoping to advertise very soon. The department also started terminating, as I said earlier, on contractors of 14 non-performing contractors. 12 contractors have since been appointed to deal with 782 units that were left by the contractors that we have terminated. And the department is in the process of introducing the performance reduction matrix, and we continue to review and tighten the controls in as far as the management of contractors' performance is concerned. As part of strengthening department's efficiency, we're looking at staff reconfiguration. What we also, and I think that MEC did allude to this, we then realized that what has contributed to the challenges we're facing with is the fact that some of the officials who were in the department and were responsible within the human settlement branch were actually moved to other areas. And now we have been approached by some of them, and we've also approached them, and they are willing to go back to those original positions so that at least we are able to capacitate that particular branch and make sure that there's stability, but also to improve their performance in that particular area. The challenge, once more, that we had was the fact that the contractors that we appointed, we used to appoint them for a shorter period, and now a decision has been taken that we should rather link them to financial year. Some were appointed for 5 months, some were appointed for 6 months, and it resulted to us having this continuous extension of contracts that were never ending. We have reconstituted now the supply chain committees with the challenges with those, and we're making sure that at least we're putting people that would understand what needs to be happening. By the 1st of April, we'll be rolling out an electronic management system that should be assisting us in terms of project management and invoice management. This would benefit both the department as well as the contractors, because we have discovered that some of the contractors, they just proceed with work without claiming. They don't know at what stage they should be claiming, which actually does affect the performance of the department with regards to the finances. From the 1st of April, Chair, we have actually stopped accepting or allowing the contractor-to-contractor sessions. We are amending those contracts, the only one that will be accepted is where there is material supply related concessions. The whole issue of the geotech, we've reviewed that, and we are now saying that it should be 50% geotech at foundation, and the rest of the money should be more of an incentive to actually encourage the contractors to go up the whole project. Otherwise, we would end up sitting with a lot of projects that are incomplete, and they only end up at a foundation phase. The planning project cycle, we have learned our lessons based on what we have went through, and we're saying for 1920 financial year, we want to start our preparation for that cycle as in now in England, so that when it's time for us to submit what is expected of us by the National Department in relation to the business plan, at least we should be able to submit a credible document. We shouldn't start planning at the time when it is requested. Chair, I think what follows that slide is basically a breakdown of the resolutions that were taken as part of the intervention plan and how far we are with regards to implementing those and issues, some of them that I have actually already spoken to. The next slide is impact on intervention from the third quarter, and now this accounts for the non-financial performance. I've spoken to issues of termination of contractors. It basically gives an indication of all the quarters as to what was the target, what was the delivery, and what is the percentage, which at this stage we're sitting at 75% performance. Though the information from our national department will be saying 80%, it's 80% in terms of the approved business plan. Ours is 75% because it's a combination of the approved business plan plus the rollover of the previous year's target of 939. The impact with regards to the finances, all the quarters, I think we're beginning to show some slight improvement in as far as how we're performing. Members will see that from quarter two to quarter three, there wasn't really much, from 76% to 80%. And currently, I think quarter four, it hasn't ended as yet, but we're sitting at 155%. And that has actually managed to place us at 87% financial performance as of date of March. The contract profiling, Chairperson, we have been raising issues about the carryover of contractors and the fact that we were, I think for a very long time, we did not terminate contracts of the non-performing contractors. Here we give it an indication of where we're coming from and what has been happening and what is actually happening on the ground as we speak. And we have those contractors where we have terminated, some we have reduced, and some we have extended the contract where we it was necessary for us to extend those contracts. As we speak currently, Chairperson, work in progress is what we have on that slide. At Foundation, we have 1,880. At World Plate, we have 1,505, and then we have the size of 1,082. The implications of the previous slide, Chairperson, is that we have prepared for the new financial year. We are ready because we already have quite a number of contractors on the ground to be able to assist in as far as 1819 is concerned. And we also have the 5,000 units allocated to HDA that is also supposed to assist in this regard. So we have presented this for the members to note that much as there wasn't and there was just slight progress as at end of quarter three, as at 8th of March, a lot has since improved. And we are convinced that the program that we have since put in place as an intervention program is sustainable enough to assist us to not to regress the next financial year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chote. Indeed, a bit an uplifting presentation compared to the presentation that we did in December, which gives us a little bit of hope. Before I open up to members to ask questions of clarity, maybe just from yourself, it would be, are you confident enough that at the end of this financial year, 2 weeks from now, will you reach 100%?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think at this stage, after the run of the 26th, we're hoping that what we're looking for is invoices amounting to 40+ million. And with the number of contractors on the ground, we are hoping that we will be able to, hopefully we'll be able to get those invoices so that then at least we can be able to have a 100% performance.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, it's that proven that I'm not going to say the name. I'm not pronouncing with your province correctly. From now on, I'm not saying the name of this province. Okay, that's the presentation. Questions, clarity, comments? Even if you don't have questions, you must applaud for the way you say it. You know. Honorable Nkatimeng, Honorable Soli, Honorable Baha, Honorable Molara, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me follow your lead and applaud the progress that is made by the Limpopo province. My concern is on the slice of contractor profile. I see you've got military veterans, and when I check, there's nothing there. Whereas we have a problem with this issue of military veterans. Or perhaps maybe you don't have them in your province. Just indicate to us. Thank you.
Honorable Soli.
Thanks, Chair. I think I was overtaken by Honorable Nkadimeng there. But I think, you know, to elaborate more is on that particular question of military veterans, is given your current performance, you know, what then does it say about your efforts to then reach your MTSF target, given your backlog? Because obviously performance in one financial year affects your overall performance, you know, for the MTSF period. So just take us into your comments about how you then plan to reconcile your performance with your target for the MTSF period. But also, just on two things, I think one of the notable things, Chair, in this regard, what we are seeing is that there is a correlation with stability at senior management level and overall performance. And you can even see it in the presentation, you know. But I think to go, you know, beyond that is also to look at what efforts are in place now dealing with some of your key capacity issues at middle management level, you know, across the department. Because I know that, you know, from previous encounters has been also, you know, you make reference to low staff morale, but there's also been just a shortage of, you know, unfilled posts, for instance, or critical skills, you know, as you go into the middle management. You can share with us what progress have you made in that regard, you know, because I think the core issues affecting this department, Chair, in the past have been above that mean level, you know. And it would be unfair to pose such questions to the officials, you know, because that was a triple factor of what was happening at executive level and how that impacted delivery and performance in that department. But I think, you know, going forward, what needs to happen is, you know, to build on the momentum and have that consistency going forward. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you very much. Honorable Baha.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think this is testimony that if contracts and contractors are managed well, the performance will definitely improve. But I think the key challenge with Limpopo province, not Limbombo, Limpopo province, Chairperson, is that contracts and contractors were not managed well. Now, we see the outcomes now in terms of an improvement on that side. And for me, I think I want to commend the province to have managed within a few months to turn around the picture that we were given sometime in November and how it looks now after production. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Baha. Honorable Vermont.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also take the opportunity to welcome the presentation and that it is a positive departure from what we had in November. The question of the military veterans has already been asked, and the slide says that the decision to revert back to the 50 square meters has already been taken. And when the expectation has always been there, how does it affect the performance? Is it still a fighting point between ourselves and the veterans? Because we might take the decision to revert back to the 50 square, but the acceptability of it might still pose a challenge. So is that challenge existing? The progress on mining towns, there's a point where Tabazimbi returned an allocation of units, and at the intervention, we say sites are now serviced in Tabazimbi in order to construct the top structures. Are we at a point where it is translated into performance in order to meet the target, or are we still going to be short? How do we marry that? Those were the only questions I had. Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. And indeed, good performance needs to be commended. Just one area which always worries us around the issue of beneficiaries. I just saw in the presentation that you are even going to use a radio to try and locate beneficiaries. Why? What happened? I just want to have a sense, because this thing of management of beneficiaries is a problem. And I think the National Department probably can also come in here. Are we in a, you know, I'm raising this because one time we had a province here that came to tell us that there are no beneficiaries. Because look, that speaks to the fact that then why then do you have a need of building houses if there is no beneficiaries? Maybe if you can just clarify this issue of the beneficiaries. That must be now looked for in radios and everywhere in newspapers. That you must come, your houses are ready. How are we managing this process of beneficiaries? Just for us, for our own comfort. Remember, because this also speaks to the fact that you would have then to minimize the issue of invasion. Because if you're going to sit with houses that are complete and you don't have beneficiaries, you're going to have invasion. So I just want to raise that in that context, so that we understand what we're dealing with. I might have misunderstood it. I just want clarity on it. In the last time you were here, there was an issue of land which we couldn't discuss because it was sub judice. We just wondered if you can maybe let us know how far that issue is, even if just progress, just to have an understanding how far it is. And HDA, you have a good relationship with them. There's five contractors that high capacity contractors that have been appointed, and you are transferring money. Can you confirm to us that this relationship with HDA is not masking the fact of your non-performance, and therefore, when things start to look bad, if you then just say HDA must manage these things, and you sit here and become comfortable, and actually there isn't any improvement. Just confirm to us that, just for my own, so that we don't sit here and think that there is improvement, and yet you decided that
let HDA handle this thing so long. So if you can maybe just clarify to me, you know, and explain it in detail, I'll be much comfortable. I'm raising that so that we don't come back later and say, actually, HDA didn't come to the party. This is where we are now. And that's why I'm raising that point. Otherwise, we're quite happy. And I do want to stress this fact that when you came here, one of the big challenges that made Limpopo not to fund to perform well was the fact that low-quality performing contractors were appointed who then couldn't perform. I remember there was even one time that one contractor was taking all the contracts from the small contractor and then got liquidated, if I remember very well. And therefore, there was no performance. With this management, proper management of contractors, there seems to be hope in the end of the tunnel. Just confirm to us again, so that we have that comfort that we are correct in saying this contractor management has improved in Limpopo, and that we are not going to see a dip again. Remember, what has been happening with Limpopo is that it goes down, it comes up, it goes down. Now we expect that it sits at sick level. We're not going to be calling you again to say, but what's happening now? Why are you dipping? So if we can have those comfort. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will respond to some of the questions and I'll request my colleagues, Mr. Chauke in particular, to assist me with some of the questions. Chair, maybe let me start with the Chairperson's questions. I think currently we're sitting with a lot of contractors on the ground. The challenge that we had in the department for some time now, it was a combination of poor performance by contractors and us not doing our part in as far as contract management is concerned. So you had a lot of, we had, the SLA is an instrument that actually is supposed to be helping us to manage the contractors. And we did have the correct clauses in the contract, but we were not implementing those clauses. So we were not holding those contractors accountable, there was no consequence management. And now because we're beginning to implement those clauses and we're terminating, in some instances we're reducing, now you're seeing a lot of contractors beginning to up their game and they're busy performing. To try and make sure that we have the right contractors on board to assist us, that's why now we're establishing this other multi-layered database that will then make sure that all the contractors that are on the system are CIDD graded and they are registered with the NHDRC, which was not necessarily the case previously. I think we did compromise some standards when we were establishing the current database that we're moving away from. Now, with relation to HDA, we have, yes, even with the HDA chair, I think we allowed HDA to take their time to do what was expected of them. We did not hold them accountable. We're beginning to hold HDA accountable. We've had a number of performance management or assessment engagements with them. We have since amended the contract that we have with HDA to the extent that we have signed a performance management agreement with them that holds them accountable on a quarterly basis so that they are able to accelerate their performance. In that contract, we also have a clawback clause. In the event there is risk or potential risk in terms of performance, then we can be able to take back the unit and be able to continue. So we're trying to make sure that we cover all the loopholes that were there and we are doing our part in terms of the agreement. Coming back to the issue of the Kibatse Land Chair, yes, the matter is, Accountant General is rounding off. They have presented to the department, they've concluded their investigation. Unfortunately, I think there was one who was actually making it difficult for them to conclude. They're likely to conclude without having engaged that person. And there are two issues that are coming out, internal processes as well as external processes. So once we have actually gone through the draft report that they've submitted to make input or for clarification questions. They will then finalize and submit as the final version of their findings in terms of the process. The one that is actually moving very slow is the part that was handed over to the Hawks. I think since the last time we've handed the matter over to them, we haven't had any engagement. We are not sure how far the process is. I think we did actually request them to make time to come and take us through as to how far they are with the process. We have just we have been informed that they are engaging the same accountant general. The other leg, which I'm saying is the external processes, once the report has been finalized, accountant general is convinced that this is the part that the Hawks can be able to run with and be able to deal with the matter. So that's how far the process is. The issue of we have been filling vacant positions at middle management and lower level. We are focusing particularly in human settlement to make sure that the branch is well capacitated. One other issue that we identified sometime last year when we were establishing the contract management governing structure is that our very own project managers on the ground were faced with a challenge, capacity challenges in terms of the skills, and that we have requested HR to assist in identifying a program that will assist them. Because I think this is where it starts, the project management issue. Once we have started tightening the screws to manage the contractors, which is the contract management part of it, we should not be lagging behind as far as project management is concerned, and we are busy capacitating them to make sure that at least they understand exactly what is expected of them. We haven't had any formal complaints with regards to the rescinded decision in relation to the military base, and I think I must apologize, we should have actually presented work in progress in as far as that is concerned since the decision was rescinded. It's work that has been done by HDA, and maybe that's why we ended up not including it. But the decision was rescinded late November, early December. I don't think there's much progress thus far, but next time when we come in back next time, we will then present work in progress and what has since happened. But there hasn't been any formal complaint that was lodged by the military vets themselves in terms of the decision set. I request Mr. Chauke then to assist with the other questions.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think HOD is spot on the issue of military vets, except in the PEC where the PEC is the Federal Steering Committee where we meet with them, including officials from DMV. So that's where there will be issues around content, but we have spoken to them to the extent that we made them understand the value of having to proceed with the national law, which is implementable. And to that effect, I think there was a question from Honorable Ndalimeng around the profiling of contractors. What we have done in our relationship with HDA, the five contractors that they have appointed to deliver 5,000 units, we have decided to strategically ask the HDA to use those contractors to build military veteran housing in the areas that we're working on. The challenge has always been that military vets are scattered. There are few people, but scattered across the province. So instead of sending one contractor to Mopani just to do 2 hours in Mopani, then you are sending him to Globex to do maybe another 3 hours. He said, let the person who has been Globex build drilling rural housing, construct military veteran housing in the place, and save. So the five contractors are split within the five regions, so each one does his own region on the depot. So it creates some bit of efficiency economically on the part of the contractor to
to be effective in delivering good results. Probably when we deliver the first quarter report in the new financial year, we should be able to report a big number. How do we fare in terms of our current delivery within the MTSF? Honorable Malachi, our MTSF target for housing was 55,251 over the 5 year period. As that last financial year, we delivered almost 26,000 of that, meaning that we are in the almost 50% of that 5 year target. With this year, we are clearly coming close to 10,000 houses, and if we do that, we probably should be closer to 35,000-36,000. We still have a shortfall of about less than 20,000, could be 19,000. But the issues that will have a relation, a correlation between the money lost around 13-14 the billion rand, and the other money that we lost on the preceding year. So that's basically what we are. Actually, Provincial Treasurer has asked us to review the target based on the money that we've lost to be able to be realistic on that. I think the other issue around Tabazimbi, Honorable Palmeran. Yes, Tabazimbi is a mining town, and it's also part of the Pakita program, where we are piloting how big human settlement can deliver at scale within the presidential project. We have since rededicated ourselves into that. Was a meeting last week where we are synchronizing with National to gear up for Tabazimbi. Yes, last year they did return the units because they wanted those units to be done in the urban space, but they were not serviced. So we then had to do a special project to service sites at Rokorokile, which is the school. Those areas have been serviced, and that's why this year we should, in the new financial year 1819, we should be able to now deliver the top structure on those service sites. I think issue of beneficiaries, Honourable Chairperson, we have predominantly in Limpopo, we're building houses in rural areas where people already are in homestead, so they own those homes. So in those cases, we don't have problems with beneficiaries. The problem arises in the urban areas, in the proclaimed areas, where because of job opportunities, at times people who have been approved. When construction starts, they are either there, or sometimes when you need to communicate with them during construction phase, they are dislocated because of job opportunities, either in towns where they are getting jobs, such as mining towns, or in the greater housing area. So I think that's the minor problem that we challenge, but it shouldn't be a train smash in that we... Previously, until now, we have been constructing on rural areas. It's only now that we are gearing more towards building more houses in urban spaces that we'll need to intensify our communication mechanisms to communicate with them, even if they sometimes are dislocated because of jobs, but we should be able to get them. The good side works in greenfields where when a house is constructed, it is not linked to a beneficiary. But in brownfield, the site already belongs to a beneficiary, and you need to locate a specific beneficiary for a completed house.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Shama.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I suppose there are three points that I can contribute to. The one relates to the beneficiary management. It already addressed. However, I just wanted to add, Madam Chair, that the question of missing beneficiaries, so-called missing beneficiaries, in large part has to do with the heightened migration the country is experiencing. So a person would register their housing need in one locality, but economic and other circumstances forces them to move. And therefore, that is why the minister has been insisting on all provinces using the National Housing Need Register, because then you do not have the scenario of a beneficiary accessing a benefit here or registering on one province and then moving, and those sort of issues. But I thought I must highlight that. Secondly, Madam Chair, I suppose we did discuss the matter of the mining towns interventions, and therefore the explanation that Mr. Chauke is providing must be looked at in that context, that it is not so much that we would want to build houses for mine workers, say to say that there are non-mine persons who reside around the mining area and therefore need housing, and therefore this intervention is meant for that. The last part, Madam Chair, I must register a caution that it probably is too soon to celebrate success. Somewhere in the good book, I can give the verse and the chapter, but if you drive out the...
Can we have the chapter?
Yeah. Oh, it's Luke 11, verse 26. But if you remove an evil spirit out of a person, that spirit hovers around looking for a home. But then it then decides, no man, that house that I left is clean. So it goes finds other spirits that are more wicked than itself, and they go back and reinvade, and the condition is worse than at the beginning. So I'm suggesting, Madam Chair, that while we note the progress, and it's good progress, there are very good signs of turnaround, the real test is in 3 years' time. Because what happens this coming financial year and the next is a function of a sustainability plan. And therefore, we would be willing, in fact, we are keen to see how we get there other than celebrating now. We've suffered before. We would want to avoid that recurring, Madam Chair. But the signs are good. I think the joint intergovernmental cooperation is proving again to be fruitful, but we can't celebrate as yet.
Thank you very much, Shama. Titi, your last one. With that said, you are covered. thank you very much, colleagues. We just want to hope that when we call you back here, we're calling you because we want to commend you on good work that you are doing. We don't want to be calling you here because you have cheated in your program. You now have a responsibility to maintain what you have managed to do, because it is very clear to us that it means that you can do better if you want to. So we just want you to make sure that you keep on that, and you actually keep the performance that you've done. And around the areas where you still need to improve on capacity, do that with speed, so that we are able to count you among the provinces that have actually turned on permanently. We really want to appreciate the fact that you have heeded some of the advices and the queries that we have raised, and we've dealt with them. And that also shows clearly that coming in front of the portfolio committee sometimes is not necessarily a punishment. It is just a way of making sure that you are able to improve performance. And I just want to thank you for that. At least nobody is even having high blood pressure here because of everybody looks healthy. That's the promise. Keep it like that. Thank you very much. We're done. There's only one item, colleagues, before we allow them to leave, is the item on the minutes of last week, where we had KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape and their letter. Can I see a mover? Moved by Honorable Romaran, seconded by Honorable Kadwe. Thank you very, very much. You see, when there is no many challenges, meeting finish task, because we want you to be able to go to the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.